This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We got more to come right now because we have Paul Dean, direct from his palatial estate in Australia. Don't tell me you don't live in a palatial estate, Paul.
No, I don't. I live in a very normal house.
Well, I live in a very normal or subnormal motel right now. I have never asked Randall what kind of home he lives in.
They call it a four-level split, and it was some wacky idea from someone back in the early 60s, early mid-60s. So it's got a thing called a crawl space, which is really irritating to have to dig stuff out of when you need to get at it.
Oh, really?
But returning to the topic, we were talking about how the NORAD and the various governmental agencies know that they've got these unidentified objects coming into their airspace. And one of the questions I wanted to ask you was, what do they mean by unidentified in those programs compared to, say, like Project Blue Book? When they're talking unidentified, they're saying there's no way that this thing could even be an aircraft. So, I mean, we know that a lot of unidentified radar tracks have been due to normal aircraft, military aircraft, SR-71, that sort of thing. But they wouldn't be considered unidentified for the purposes of UFO investigations in the Air Force back in Blue Book days. So how are we differentiating the two there, do you know?
The thing is that when NORAD or first Air Forces out of Tyndall Air Force Base in Florida or Elmendorf Air Force Base in Alaska or whatever, when they detect, they've got huge primary radar systems and different types. Doppler, a 3D trackwall scan. They've got different types of radar systems that can see out for hundreds of miles. Then there's the ballistic missile early warning system, et cetera. We definitely know, I mean, their very job is to pick up stuff on radar that's obviously not an aircraft. It's not talking via radio. It's not running a transponder like an IFF signal. It's doing weird things. It might be coming at the United States or Canada incredibly quickly. It might be at a very unusual altitude. It might be disappearing and reappearing off radar. It might be doing loop-de-loops, whatever. That their job, in case that is a Russian AWACS aircraft or a whole squadron of Russian Tupolev bombers, the whole job of these early warning systems is to detect unknown objects. Now, obviously, we're not interested when they pick up balloons that they just ignore because they're going so slowly or because they are seen by a civilian airliner as a balloon. You know, we're not interested in any of that. Obviously, we're only interested in the cases that they can't solve. And we don't know, you know, obviously we don't know what happens at headquarters and at the sector headquarters, but I'll give you an example that kind of answers your question. We know when NORAD pick up an unknown object, at first it's simply called an unknown track. It's not an airliner, or it could be an airliner that's been hijacked, say, that's had its radios turned off. But for all intents and purposes, it's not an aircraft, and it's going too fast to be a balloon. It's not going to be a missile because it's been up there, say, for so long. It's too slow to be re-entering space debris. We know it's something that's appearing a bit like an aircraft, but it's something to worry about. Now, if this unknown track, if it doesn't land or turn around or ask for help or produce a mayday signal or whatever, after a few minutes, NORAD say, okay, this thing's getting faster or whatever, it's not going away, we'll launch fighter jets at it, so F-22 Raptors or F-15 Eagles out of Elmendorf or Tyndall or McCord or whatever. So, I mean, this takes time. It takes 5 minutes to get them off the ground, whatever. Now, how it works is this. If NORAD has this unknown track on their screens, and there's even got a quality rating, how good the unknown track is, like how solid it is it sort of really weak and barely there, or is it a really solid big blip on the screen? Now, if the object is solid for a while, if it's solid for 5 minutes, and that is the actual rules, 5 minutes, they give it in seconds, I think that's 300 seconds, if NORAD screens are picking up this aircraft or object for 5 minutes and they still have no resolution, they don't know what it is, it's called an NRU, NORAD Remaining Unknown. Now, we've got these documents. They're just briefs and they're just what we call instructions or guidelines for NORAD staff. We've got copies of them. It's been the same word. The word unknown track and then NORAD Remaining Unknown has been around for decades. And so what happens is sometimes the NORAD Remaining Unknown that's in the airspace for more than 5 minutes, sometimes it never gets solved. The fighter jets get out there, it disappears. Or what I'm interested in is when the fighter jets get out there, they do see what it is and they're not allowed to talk about it. That's apparently there is cases where NORAD is tracking something, they don't know what it is for 10, 20 minutes, it's solid, it's fast, and fighter jets say two fighter jets coming out of Elmendorf or Ellison Air Force Base, Alaska, will get out to the object and they will come back and they'll say, we saw it, but we don't know what that was. It wasn't a Russian bomber and it wasn't a cruise missile. It was shiny. Apparently this still is happening now. These are your classic, I suppose, early Blue Book UFOs. Like, the problem is getting documents. We know some statistics. NORAD actually have published in the past in these things called tactical history documents. They've published statistics on NORAD Remaining Unknowns and what cases were never solved. So they'll say, like, for instance, the 11th Tactical Control Group in Alaska has got a 50-page document from 1988, and on one of the pages it's got a list of all the unknown tracks and NORAD Remaining Unknowns and scrambles, like where aircraft have been scrambled at unknown objects. It's got a list of them, and you can actually see for, say, the month of January, there were two unsolved unknown aircraft cases. And you think, you know, the best systems in the world and the best pilots in the world, they are not able to identify things sometimes happening right over the middle of the United States or Canada. This doesn't have to be out near Cuba or Alaska or something. These events have happened, you know, right over the middle of Kansas, and they're not able to identify the objects, or if they are, they're not telling us.
Right, so, and that's the difference between, in the definition for a UFO, that's the difference between an unidentified flying object an unknown aircraft. Because
anything can be an unknown. I mean, an unidentified flying object is simply something that's just not readily explainable quickly.
No, hang on, that's a myth. What we've got here for the actual official definitions is something completely different from that sort of common misperception, and that's why I was trying to get the two things sorted out here, because we've got unknown aircraft as being flying objects determined to be aircraft, generally appear as a result of ADIZ violations and often prompt UFO reports, and that's one of the things that they specifically say you don't report as a UFO.
Yeah.
Okay, so an unidentified flying object is any airborne object. So unidentified flying objects are any airborne object which, by performance, aerodynamic characteristics, or unusual features does not conform to known aircraft missiles, or which does not correspond to the definitions in A or B, which includes familiar and known objects, planets, meteors, stars, aircraft, flares, and on and on and on. Basically, an unidentified flying object boils down to something alien, some sort of an alien craft. That's all that's left after you rule everything out. Whereas unknown aircraft could conceivably be these unknown tracks. So I'm trying to differentiate, well, how many of the reports are simply unknown tracks and how many are UFOs?
That's the thing we don't know. I mean, that we know at least, well, like I was saying, we know at least that when there's an unknown track, and it could just be an aircraft that hasn't turned its transponder on or a helicopter that's refusing to cooperate with radio or whatever. And, you know, they would know that when it's at 2,000 feet and it looks like it's coming between a pair of airports in Oklahoma. Of course, it's going to be a plane. But the point is, you ask a good question in that how many of these unknown tracks are just quite clearly planes, and how many of them are what we would traditionally and call UFOs that behave way beyond the norm. The thing is, we just don't know. Like I was saying, though, we do have statistics that do show that sometimes NORAD and the US Air Force do have long-running over 5 minute events that they scrambled for that they simply cannot solve.
Let's solve this problem, ladies and gentlemen. It's called a commercial announcement. Paul, you'll do it again when I call on you.
Sure.
We've got Paul Dean. We've got J. Randall Murphy. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Normal blood pressure, naturally. How would that make you feel?
I'm Don from New Mexico. January of 2000, I had a heart attack. Then my real health began going downhill. I had high blood pressure, diabetes, poor vision. I wasn't sleeping well. I was a mess.
Don reports dramatic improvements with Heart and Body Extract.
I started taking Heart and Body Extract from within a few days. I started sleeping better. My blood pressure normalized. My diabetes normalized. My sleep improved.
Experience these benefits and more when your body heals itself with the assistance of Heart and Body Extract. Order at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305. That's hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305.
And folks, I did not expect this at all. By the 7th, 8th, and 9th day, I saw dramatic improvements from taking Heart and Body Extract.
Heart and Body Extract comes with a 100% ironclad money-back guarantee. Details at hbextract.com or call 866-295-5305 for Heart and Body Extract.
Healthcare reform is confusing. With the loss of the Obamacare mandate, those needing help can now choose an affordable alternative. By joining Liberty HealthShare, you're part of a community of health-conscious Americans all over the country who control their own healthcare costs and choices. Liberty HealthShare is not insurance. It is an association of self-pay patients who unite with like-minded people to share the cost of their medical needs. Neighbor helping neighbor. Learn more now by going to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free Reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Hunters, anglers, campers, and survivalists, get back to nature. Expand your horizons with the highest quality, most versatile, unique slingshots and sling bows on the market at slingbow.com. Slingbow products are compact and models start from just $17.98. They're perfect for your bug out bag or storing in your vehicle. Give yourself and your loved ones the excitement and tradition of slingbow, a new frontier in archery, and truly modern twist on this primitive survival tool. Feel the thrill only at slingbow.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Ah, excitement here. All these incredible sightings that are happening before our eyes with Paul Dean, with J. Randall Murphy and Gene Steinberg. But with all the stuff going on, we know the military sees these things happening year after year. But it's always the same thing. We have sighting after sighting and different levels of government attention, documents they collect, but we never seem to get past that.
Yeah.
Where do we go from here? What do we do?
All we can do, the thing is, and part of me, it sounds really odd, people look at me, well, people in the UFO field find this a bit odd, but part of me now after so long, I don't care. I know that the topic's gonna twist and turn and change forever. We know that. It just grinds on and on every year. So I'm more of an archivist in that I'm trying to save, well, both analyze material, old material, new material, old records, new records, and I'm trying to archive them. And so maybe one day we will be able to further solve it. Yeah, like it's very, very complex because so many people have different opinions on it, and so many people see the UFO topic in such completely different ways. And like I was saying, I think it's really important to read skeptical literature. I mean, some of it's terrible. Some skeptical literature is nearly as bad as the worst of the worst UFO literature, but some skeptical literature is absolutely essential reading. I don't know where we go to from here. I don't know where we're going to be. There's the other problem with, of course, the UFO field is that it lacks a lot of sort of PhD scientists. You know, in the 60s, we had really good scientists like James McDonald and Hynek and various others, even Menzel. And we now have social media and Facebook and arguments and now we have social media and arguments on forums, and we have debates that just don't go anywhere, and needless conferences and overpriced books. And so, I don't know where we go to from.
Well, I've got a suggestion. Speaking of forums, we've got a question here from one of our forum members for you, from Existential. He asks, can you briefly discuss and share your thoughts on the Westall UFO incident of 1966?
Sure.
Go ahead.
Well, it actually happened. That actually occurred only about, in your language, 10 miles from my house. Back then, there was Melbourne's a big city in the area, and there was a suburb. It's now changed names to Clayton, but there was a suburb called Westall. And in 1966, it was a new suburb, young families. It was on the outskirts of Melbourne. And one morning, there was a pair of schools, a primary school, I think you call it, like the younger kids, and a high school for the older kids. There was two schools located quite near each other. And at the end of recess, at the end of first recess, around about 10 past 10 in the morning, numerous children started gathering to watch what appeared to be a number. And this is one of the problems with this case. We don't know how many, but a number, one, two or more UFOs, or at least unknown bodies, or certainly unfamiliar bodies, fly past the school, do some maneuvers or move around a bit in the sky, land or come very, very close to landing on the ground. And this happened over an extended period of time. It happened over enough time for some students to run inside and actually get the science teacher, Andrew Greenwood. And so the science teacher, Andrew Greenwood, came out, and he actually saw these objects. They were very far away, and he had trouble making them out, but he did see them. And so we've got one science teacher that saw them, and we've got numerous children. Now, something definitely happened. There's no question about that. But the story only really gathered steam. The other thing is that we are pretty sure that government respondents like the fire brigade police, maybe the Department of Supply or someone in the military, maybe the army, did come on the scene like sometime after that. Now, what we know is this. We know that the government were concerned about it, and they were on the scene. We know something definitely was flying around. It was certainly unfamiliar to the students. The problem with this case is, for me, is that the event only really gathered steam in the last sort of 15 years, in that people, witnesses at the schools, only came out en masse like 15 years ago. And the problem with that is that memories change. One big problem with this case is we don't even know how many objects there are out of the dozens or sort of 100 or 150 people that have come forward claiming that they were part of the event that morning. Some people insist there was one object or remember there being one object. Many people insist there were two UFOs. Some people say there were definitely three. Some people even say four. And there's a few people that say there were five UFOs on the morning. Now, the other thing is, from a scientific or technical perspective, we don't know the stuff we need to analyze this case, like what direction the object came from, what direction it left, azimuth and bearing, altitude. We have a rough idea of color and shape of the object or objects, but we don't have those essential. You know, there's even disagreement on the colour of the objects. There's, I mean, for instance, Andrew Greenwood, the science teacher, he recounted that both objects were quite different in appearance, and also they were so far away and so small that students were actually having to point them out to them. He had to virtually kind of squint to see them. And, you know, it's a great case as far as culture and history goes. There's no doubt something really strange happened, and there's no doubt that the government were not happy about it. But we just don't know what it was.
Have you got any actual documents out of your...
No, that's the other problem with this case is Australia's been pretty good. Australia's government, like our Department of Civil Aviation and our Royal Australian Air Force and our air ministries and so on, they've released a very, very large number of documents on UFOs, particularly from the 60s. Yet this particular case, there is not a single... There is not in government archives, in war archives, in state archives, in military doctrine, military history, there is not a single page, not a single sentence in a single page that mentions the Westall case, and it's troubling. The other thing is the fact that the government were on the scene so quickly, I personally think that it was a government program or a government project of something that was flying that went horribly wrong, personally. I don't know, though. I mean, it could be a true flying saucer case of the highest order, and I wouldn't be surprised if it was, but I very much would not be surprised if it was a government program, like a very early pair of drones that escaped, mini balloon program, a highball effort, whatever, because there's some odd things about this case, and I'll tell you what they are.
I'll tell you what, we're going to have to do a break, and sure. After we come back from the break, Paul, then you can tell us more about that. And let's look at the suspicious aspects. And I want to ask you more about the possibility of different cases being government experiments as opposed to, you know, like kind of thing. Paul Dean, Gene Steinberg, and J. Randall Murphy, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
GCN is hiring information technologists with Linux backgrounds, Cisco routing, database management, web development, with cross-platform flexibility. If you ever wanted to be involved in an exciting career in radio and love developing new delivery platforms, join the fastest-growing network, GCN. Inquire at careers@GCNlive.com or call 877-996-4327. That's 877-996-4327.
Most of you know that heart disease is the number one silent killer in the U.S. What if I told you for just $54.95 a month you could fight against heart disease naturally? At Heart and Body Extract, we've been helping thousands of people get back to a healthier heart. Don't just take my word for it. Check out all of the success stories at hbextract.com. Or to order, call 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. hbextract.com. Don't risk it when you can take charge of it.
For USA Radio News, I'm Wendy King. Major wildfires continue to burn in the Northwest, forcing thousands from their homes. The largest at this point is the so-called Carr Fire, burning near Redding, California.
I can confirm that we're up over 80,000 acres now on this fire.
Cal Fire Battalion Chief Jonathan Cox says more than 500 homes have been destroyed. 40,000 people have been evacuated. So far, 5 people have died, and at least 12 area residents have not yet been accounted for. At this time, the blaze is only 5% contained. The Cranston Fire in Southern California is now more than 12,000 acres and is believed to be an arson fire. A man has been arrested and charged. And the Ferguson Fire near Yosemite continues to burn. Yosemite National Park is now closed until at least next weekend. You're listening to USA Radio News.
The following update is for drivers who pay too much for car insurance due to DUIs, DWIs, tickets, or anything else. Our company specializes in low-cost SR22 auto insurance. We know that mistakes happen and offer free quotes for very affordable auto insurance meant specifically for you, the overpaying high-risk driver. The quote is free and we'll handle the filing so you can start saving money. Call 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725. 800-758-0725.
With a recession ending, if you've been putting off building your business, now is the time to act. General Steel will meet or beat any price on a pre-engineered steel building of the same size and specifications. Act now, before steel prices go up. So call us today for free information.
Call 800-965-1290. 800-965-1290, 800-965-1290.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-261-9818 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-261-9818. Again, 800-261-9818.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
I'm so glad after all these thousands of years we've added Paul Dean to the roster of great Paracast guests. So, Paul, now that you've been here once, if we haven't scared you away, we want you back.
Sure. I'll do a show again if you want. Yeah, sure. If you people can handle my accent.
Well, we can handle you. We can handle the accent. We've had Gogs Mackay, who's from Scotland, and he comes on every so often. And that's Sean Connery without trying to act British. That's David Tennant in his original accent. Bond. I can do rolling R's. I can do that. I can do all that stuff. But that's how it goes. Randall.
Right. We were just finishing up with the Westall incident there.
Okay, so what's interesting about the Westall case as well is that, look, there's a lot of things that tell me, and you could say that the fact that there is so scary, you could also say that because it was not a UFO case, that there's no UFO paperwork. One thing that is troubling is the great atmospheric physicist James E. McDonald, who was probably the best scientist to ever study the UFO topic. He actually came to Melbourne, and he'd had the chance to interview this. So, like I said, there was a lot of students that saw it, and a science teacher, Andrew Greenwood. James McDonald interviewed Andrew Greenwood. And anyway, James McDonald, about 18 months later, did a very, very famous speech in Washington, and it was with the House Symposium on Unidentified Flying Objects, a government symposium. McDonald had all the chance in the world. He had a whole segment on mass UFO sightings, like mass population UFO sightings, where dozens or hundreds of people have all seen the same thing at the same time on a clear day, basically. So James McDonald's up there doing this speech, and we've got transcripts for it. We've got the exact wording. He'd just come back from Australia, where he had interviewed the science teacher who was at Westall. He had this opportunity to discuss an international Aussie case where potentially hundreds of students had seen two or three UFOs in the sky. Yet McDonald gets up there at the House Symposium and he does a whole section on mass UFO sightings, mass witness UFO sightings. He doesn't mention Westall once. He either, well, we can only assume that he just wasn't impressed by it. I don't know. And maybe he felt from the very beginning that it was a government program like a pair of balloons or something. I don't know. The other thing that's a bit troubling about it is this. When researchers in Melbourne, my city, tried to investigate the Westall case, I do know that one of them, one particular researcher, I think her name was Judith McGill, she came away actually not that impressed. Like, where there was a supposed landing site, where the UFO or UFOs had supposedly landed, there was apparently trace cases, big flattened areas of grass, and some people even claim burnt grass or damaged, heavily damaged grass. But we see in the history books, we see that some researchers were not that impressed by it. And they thought that there was nothing much to it. Now, some early UFO newsletters in my state, they barely mention Westall at all. And it's like, if this was such a sensational event, and kids do talk, and parents talk, and the school was completely awash with UFO tales, and investigators were on the scene, and apparently no one, a lot of people just didn't consider it that good. Having said that, we do have a situation where it's never been solved. I will absolutely admit that. And it could easily be Australia's best UFO case. The problem is it's 50 years ago. We just do not know. We just don't know.
That takes us all the way back around to when you first started the show. You talked a bit about the Valentech case, and some of the skeptics say that he maybe got into doing some drug running. And have you been able to follow up on any of that, where he's actually living in India and so on?
I know a heck of a lot about the case, and we've got, over the years, researchers have had very close contact with his family. We don't believe the drug running thing was a disgrace. That was literally started as a disgraceful rumor, and to pick of all things to pick that, and then he disappeared, you know, landed the plane somewhere, God knows where he would land an entire plane and not ever be discussed and go to India, is ridiculous. There's a few possibilities that he either did see a really unusual UFO. Now, we know it wasn't a Royal Australian Air Force jet, because we know that jets at that time, the closest jets were about 400, or in your language, 280 miles away, and nothing was airborne that weeknight. We do know that it wasn't a civilian airliner that was chasing him around. We do know that it was very unusual. We do know that he completely vanished. Now, either he saw a genuine UFO, or he thought he was being harassed by a genuine UFO event and crashed and just simply disappeared, or was snatched, I don't know, or he misinterpreted a whole range of events. It could have been a range of meteor shower events and a couple of planets and stars. Maybe the sunset has thrown him. Maybe his instruments weren't working. Maybe it was, you know, I don't know. People have thrown around the ideas that he was drug running and he crashed, because he was so nervous, maybe. People have thrown around the idea that he committed suicide. We're pretty sure that's not the case. He had just gotten engaged. He was a Catholic. I believe certainly his family were very religious, and I don't know if it's the same in your country, but suicide is considered, it's not exactly the dumb thing.
It doesn't seem like the thing to do either, if you've just gotten engaged.
Yeah, people have said to me before that a couple of researchers have told me that they know the family really well, and they've said everyone unequivocally states he would not do it to his mother. He would not kill himself at the age of 21. Now, I don't know. Like, the other possibility is that he was trying to pull a hoax, like that he was trying to set up a UFO event and come back some sort of hero. And look, it's possible. Was he a joker? Who knows? He would be over 50 now, and no one knows. People have said he was just a normal kid. He was a fun-loving kid. But he wouldn't have – people have specifically said he probably wasn't the type to try and pull a huge hoax, and he certainly wasn't the type to suicide. Personally, I think it's a 50-50. He either saw a genuine UFO event, or certainly something like – at a stretch, something like a missile that was chasing him around, whatever, or that there was some incredible – a coincidence of natural events, like he was flying with bad instruments, and at the same time he had a few meteorites coming towards him, and then he got nervous, or he maybe had a blackout, an epileptic fit. I don't know. The thing is, I remember once one of Australia's most sensible researchers, certainly a guy that has helped me no end, his name's Keith Basterfield. I said to him, when I first met him about 5 years ago, I said to him point blank, I said, with the Valenti case, what do you actually think happened? Was it a UFO? He said, I'll never forget, he said this to me, he said, the bottom line is, I just do not know. That's the bottom line.
That's never been solved.
And after 40 years, you would hope that there would be something more concrete. And, yeah, I don't know.
Now, this is really, really a compelling case, but in the scheme of things, it's really difficult to deal with older cases. Obviously, memories shift over the years. Some people inflate a story, some people don't, some people forget, conflate it with pop culture, things like that. It's the problem, of course, that we have with Roswell, where I just hardly think it's worth doing anything about Roswell anymore, except for, as Kevin Randall has done, chase the footnotes and label stuff that's questionable as questionable, and let's try to go on. You know, like Shag Harbor is another pretty old case. We got Paul Dean, fascinating guest. I wonder why we haven't had him on before. And neighbors, if you haven't subscribed yet to the Paracast Plus, I'm going to ask you why. I know some of you on YouTube complain about all the commercials, which is normal for a terrestrial broadcast. So if you want a version of the show without the commercials, that's just one of the features we offer on the Paracast Plus. We also give you the After the Paracast podcast, and this week you'll be hearing from UFO researcher Kurt Collins. He has a site called Blue Blurry Lines. After the Paracast, only available if you subscribe to the Paracast Plus. Go to plus.theparacast.com. I'm Gene, he's Randall, and he's Paul. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
As you know, neighbors, web hosting can be pretty cheap, but not all hosting is the same. DreamHost wins best of awards year after year. You get unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, and even the low-cost plans put your sites on high-performance SSDs. Want to know more about what DreamHost has to offer? Go to technightowl.com/host. Once again, that's technightowl.com/host.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Water is the single most important thing your body needs, so you want to be sure it's the best for you and your family. Since 2005, thousands have depended on Berkey Purified Water. The Berkey guy provides the lowest priced filtration systems in every size. For incredibly delicious water now and in an emergency, get to GoBerkey.com or call 877-886-3653. 877-886-3653. GoBerkey.com.
If you like alkaline water, or know someone that does, you're going to love the Dillon Living Water Bottle. It creates alkaline water on the go while reducing plastic waste and saving you money. Made with surgical-grade stainless steel, the Dillon Bottle increases the pH up to 9 to deliver both alkaline and antioxidant water anywhere you want it. Alkaline water is healthier, tastes better, and can even boost energy. The Dillon Bottle makes it easy and affordable to be healthy and achieve optimal hydration. Get your Dillon Bottle today at BYLN.co. That's BYLN.co.
Tired of being censored by Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and Patreon? Well, now you don't have to be. OneWay.com is the free speech and human-friendly social network built just for you. Stop feeding the beast. Every post you make on those evil, anti-human, anti-American perverted sites helps them destroy our families, our country, and our souls. Join One Way today and take back your liberty. Your free speech alternative is waiting for you at OneWay.com. OneWay.com.
Policies issued by American General Life Insurance Company, Houston, Texas. Not available in all states. For details, visit AIGDirect.com.
Do you have a family? Would you like to help make sure they'll be taken care of if anything were to happen to you? If you answered yes, you probably need life insurance. Now, do you think life insurance is expensive? If you answered yes to that, too, you definitely need to give AIG Direct a call. We could find you a $250,000 policy for just $14 a month, which means you could save hundreds of dollars a year. Call us now for a free, no-obligation quote. 1-800-910-5936. Since 1995, we've helped millions of people find out if they could save up to 70% on their term life insurance. See how affordably we can help you protect your family. Call AIG Direct now for your free quote. 1-800-910-5936. You could save up to 70%. That's 1-800-910-5936. 1-800-910-5936.
Get the ultimate knife at an ultimate price. The Fox Karambit Knife. Finally available in the U.S. The Fox Karambit Knife opens with one hand, faster than you can pull a handgun. For utility, for defense, and for way less than other knives of this caliber. Go to TheUltimateKnife.com. Truly the best knife you will ever own. And only available at TheUltimateKnife.com. Use promo code radio at checkout for free shipping. Get the ultimate knife at the ultimate price at TheUltimateKnife.com.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Paul Dean, J. Randall Murphy, Gene Steinberg. So, as I said, in chasing the footnotes, looking at older cases, and certainly you told us of one there that's just really, really fascinating. What about the newest cases of all? It almost looks like the best cases in the history of the UFO field are older and older, getting older every year. What's happened in the last 5 years or 10 years? Other stuff that we can look to maybe get off that kick and get to something modern.
Yeah, look, there are some. I know that if you look at a survey of researchers or scientists and ask them what the best UFO cases or what their personal top 20 UFO cases are, most of them occurred in the 50s and 60s and some in the 70s, a couple in the 40s, and then there's just this drop-off in the 80s and 90s. And look, there are some very, very, very good cases in the last 20 years. But they're few and far between. A lot of the time, of course, we just don't know because they just haven't come out. You know, people haven't talked. Pilots still want to hold their jobs, or records can't yet be declassified, or the case happened in a country where you can barely get information. It might be, I mean, if we had an extraordinary case, say, in, say, Uganda, you know, it might be really great to read in Swahili, but you're not going to be able to assess it very easily when you're speaking English.
We haven't asked you yet. Have you ever seen one yourself?
No, I've never seen anything at all.
Do you go out and look much?
Australia's got an incredible sky, very clear skies. We've got the Milky Way. I wouldn't say I go out looking for UFOs. I sometimes watch aircraft pulling into airports and look at the stars. But no, the very whole point of unidentified flying objects is it's such a scant, like a fleeting event. I mean, most UFO cases actually really only happen for 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 seconds. So you've got to be out. The timing would just have to be impeccable. And you have to have perfect eyesight. It has to be good weather, whatever. And so, I've never seen anything. I do know people, obviously, who have. I mean, I've formally interviewed people. But to answer your question before, I think that in recent times, the Nimitz case, that the case off the coast of Florida in 2004, where you've got four aircraft in two lots with eight people on board. So, four lots, four pilots, four weapons systems officers over two sorties. It chased collecting the Tic Tac, I think that that's proving to be an excellent case, and we're finding out more all the time. More first-hand interviews, more we've got a great knowledge now of what the weather was like on the day, what the sea conditions were like on the day, what the support ships were, what the submarine didn't see anything that was underneath the ships, yet the Princeton was picking up the objects for days. We're just getting a huge amount of information, and it started off as an avalanche. I mean, this needs very, very, very significant looking into, and I can almost assure you that someone within the Navy's Inspector General or Judge Advocate or someone within the Office of Naval Intelligence has definitely, definitely taken a keen interest in this event. And certainly AATIP and the DIA and the UFO contractors like Bigelow were working on this case and have for a long time. A lot of people have been interviewed. There is good data. We know exactly what the radar systems were at the time. We know that the footage is genuine. We know that, for instance, the location has been absolutely pinpointed. So that's proving to be an excellent case. How many more are there? I don't know.
That case, of course, the DIA itself has never made any comment on it other than to say that they had thought they were releasing and declassifying that video for training purposes and pretty much felt sandbagged when Elizondo went off the edge with the UFO claim, and now they're just saying you're not getting anything else out of us.
They're not. They're certainly slow. All the Department of Defense did was make a comment. Was that yes, the AATIP program did exist, and it has been since closed down. Now I've heard of someone who's really in the know that the program actually never closed. It was moved on. I've heard from someone who should know what's going on, that the program was focused a bit more, like a little bit smaller, and more focused, more mission orientated, and it moved in 2012 or 2013. It moved to a very, very small joint desk between two agencies. Now they could be the CIA and the Navy, they could be the Army and whatever, but the AATIP UFO effort moved. Now, it's not surprising. I mean, your military is enormous, as is England, as is Canada's, and Australia's is quite big. If the government said to me, no, we closed down the program in 2012 and that's it, I don't believe a word of it, because there is no way when you've got a situation where UFOs are being reported by qualified or certainly credible people, there is no way, even just for the points of national security and even just for the points of psychology of pilots and whatever, they're not going to completely brush the topic of aside just because Blue Book closed 50 years ago.
They can't. You were saying that there's these various desks in the different departments that are tasked with dealing with these specific types of reports. Well, where do they send them after they decide, well, look, this one is unidentified, it's unknown, we can't explain it as a unknown aircraft? I mean, what do? Just stick it in a filing cabinet and that's the end of it?
That's what I'm led to believe. Well, each situation's different. For example, I think I was saying before that the 7602 field activities group in the 80s, in the 70s and 80s, one of their jobs was to look into incoming space debris, and that included studying UFO reports from all around the world to pinpoint the location of incoming space debris. Now, what was done with those files? I mean, if they found out that it was in fact not space debris, that they had all these UFO reports in somewhere like Algeria or something, what did they do with those assessments and files? They probably stuck them in a filing cabinet. When you get to someone like NORAD, though, who are in a situation where US Air Force pilots are being possibly buzzed by unknowns, NORAD remaining unknowns in airspace, I mean, where do the files go? Where do the position statements and where does the original radar track data goes? I would think that it goes to anyone who's interested. If someone from the Office of the Secretary of Defense or J2 Operations or J2 Intelligence at the Pentagon or someone from a ballistic missiles desk, if they show an interest, if they come to NORAD as an officer with a security clearance and say, look, we suspect that you've got so-called UFO files, would you share them with us? Because we're doing our own assessments, I suspect that NORAD then pull them out of the filing cabinets and hand them on. People say, is there a huge suppository? Is there a particular vault? Is there a particular centralized place where UFO sightings, radar tracks, evidence, old newspaper articles, lists of UFO researchers, whatever, where is it all kept? Is it kept in one spot in Colorado at Peterson Air Force Base, or is it kept in the bowels of the Pentagon, or is it kept at Lackland Air Force Base, Texas? People don't realize how incredibly fragmented the U.S. military is. They just can't collate that much stuff.
I'd find it hard to believe that they would go to all the work to actually collect all of this information and then simply stick it in a filing cabinet and not bother doing any analysis.
That reminds me, folks, of Indiana Jones, the original movie, where they stuck it in some kind of basement. And then, of course, from that came the TV show Warehouse 13. So I will always say here that all the really good UFO information, the stuff that proves what they are, is being held in Warehouse 13. Paul Dean, can you tell our listeners, if they want to know more about the things you do, where do they go?
Okay, so if you go to Google or whatever and type in UFOs documenting evidence, Paul Dean, if you type that in, you will get my blog. I've written maybe 150 blog posts in the last, say, 3 or 4 years. And if you go to the right-hand side of the screen, there's little arrows where you can look down month by month by month, like most blogs. And there's something in there for everyone. There's stuff about UFO sightings. There's stuff about government policy. There's stuff about files and how they're kept and how they're released. There's things about how governments handle media inquiries about UFOs. There's things about even stuff about what a UFO scientist's job description should look like.
Randall, where can we find your stuff?
I'm at ufopages.com, as always.
And our site, theparacast.com, is undergoing modifications. Huge changes, brand new store coming soon. We're on Twitter as theparacast, 2 Paracast fan clubs on Facebook. And then we have the Paracast Plus. Go to plus.theparacast.com. That's plus.theparacast.com. You get a version of the show free of the network ads, the After the Paracast podcast, and more goodies are coming. Prices are cheap, starting at $1.49 a week. And with lifetime and 5-year subscriptions, we give you free stuff. Isn't that cool? Free stuff for a subscription. The Paracast Plus at plus.theparacast.com. Paul Dean, glad we connected. Thank you for joining us on the Paracast.
That's okay. Thanks for having me.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
With uncertain times in the United States, it's only prudent to consider storing precious metals in a safe place outside our borders. And Miles Franklin, we have done just that for you. Partnered with the most respected storage company in the industry, Miles Franklin is proud to offer the only fully insured private safe deposit box program in North America, held in Vancouver and Toronto. Send us your previously purchased precious metals or have one of our brokers help you purchase something new. Questions? Please call one of our experienced brokers at 866-485-4346.
products. Solid Foundational Storage, partnered with the most respected name in security. Maintaining an A-plus Better Business Bureau rating and residing in Minnesota, the only state in America that regulates the precious metals industry, making doing business in precious metals with Miles Franklin the safest choice. Call us at 866-485-4346. Again, that's 866-485-4346. Miles Franklin Limited, a name you can trust.